A lot of people are showing their patriotism by flying their flag, said Scott Baumgard, who is a senator from Arizona. He went on to say, but there are some of us that are prevented from doing that, and the rest of the public should know there are rules in homeowners associations that prevent other Americans from participating in this patriotic fervor. Our guest today is Richard Alton. He's one of the people who is being prevented from flying his flag, but Richard's patriotism isn't new. It hasn't happened since September 11th. This has been ongoing. Hi, Richard, right?
Glad to be here.
Nice to have you with us. Thank you. And your wife, Ava's on the phone. Ava's on the phone. Hi, Ava.
Hey.
This is not, your flag has not been flying since September 11th. You've been flying your flag for a whole lot longer than that. And you've been going through a whole lot of problems a whole lot longer than a month, haven't you?
Well, it's been going on since we moved in our house in early 99. January 99 is when we moved in. We put our flag up on Memorial Day, 99. That was the trigger date, I guess. So we went out on Memorial Day and put a temporary flagpole up on our lot. Our lot is just a little under 2 acres, so it's not out of scale. But we put a temporary pole up on Memorial Day, and the next day, the Homeowners Association Board had an emergency meeting and put in writing that the pole had never been allowed and the flag atop it all combined to create a visual nuisance that could lower property values and ordered it down.
Oh, so your flagpole is a visual nuisance, or is it the flag that's a visual nuisance?
Well, I don't think there's much meaning to a flagpole without a flag, so it's kind of all one and the same thing, I guess.
So basically you're saying that if they attack the flagpole, then basically they're also...
They ban the flag, right.
They're banning the flag as well.
Yeah. And the flagpole is actually, it's interesting, because what we did is we picked a fairly expensive flagpole, and it's, I guess, about a $1,200, $1,500 investment. It was a dark bronze, matte finish pole that just blends right in with the trees, and about everyone that's ever come by said that the pole is basically invisible with all the trees, because you've got to realize we've got close to 2 acres. That's fairly heavily wooded. And so, you don't even see the flagpole. What you really see is the flag.
But, you know, some people have complained that the noise, flapping, you know, flapping.
That was in Arizona, I think, yeah. I thought that was
this has been going on. There have been so many flag issues across the country, and we've heard so many excuses by associations as to why they want to ban the flags. One of the reasons was, say it's a noisy thing and we don't want to hear these flags flapping in the wind. But with 2 acres, it's hardly likely that your next door neighbors are going to be bothered by any noise.
Well, it's interesting you say that, because we've got a double 6 foot high waterfall that's a straight fall down into about a 4,000-5,000 gallon pond, and trust me, that makes a lot more noise than the flag ever would.
So nobody worries about that, huh?
No, not at all.
So it's basically your flag. They don't want you to fly your flag.
That seems to be the issue.
And you have spent a small fortune.
It's not the first price I've ever paid, because I got wounded in Vietnam, so people try to look at this and look at the dollar sign, and really the dollars don't matter to us. We'll go right down to the last dime if we have to. But to put in perspective, we've taken out around $200,000 out of our retirement. And we're in the process of raising funds now. We've got a lot of veteran organizations donating. And it may wind up being close to $1 million. It could be $1 million battle to take one flag down in western Noriko County.
You're kidding. You think
it's done? No, it's not. Because, actually, what the developer told, when the homeowners were reluctant to go this way, and I had put in writing at the time, as a practicing lawyer, that I thought that the issues in this case would wind up costing over $100,000 to litigate it on each side as a developer, and it would probably take 2 years to get just through the trial court. The developer said that, well, this is not true. It's going to be just a few $1,000s. It's just a minor issue. It's a covenant violation, and maybe the Homeowners Association will spend maybe $3,000 on it, and it should be over in about 6 months. Well, 2 years later, over 2 years later, the Homeowners Association's written checks out for about $130,000, and now we're going into an appeal process where the Homeowners Association will wind up spending probably another $200,000 on the Virginia appeals, and then after that we'll be going on to federal courts, assuming we don't win at the Virginia level, which I think we will, but if we didn't, we'd be going to federal courts and on up to the Supreme Court, because there's enough free speech issues and all that to get before the Supreme Court. And at that point, you're looking at a total of 5 to 7 more years and probably $1 million expense to the Homeowners Association. And this is about a 1,500-home community.
This is going to be an expense to the Homeowners Association and not the builder himself.
Well, the builder, it's interesting how, you know, I never knew the dynamics of this, but the more I see it, the more interesting. I mean, these guys are really, I give them a lot of credit for being slick. I don't think their values are quite the same as mine, but they're pretty slick.
Oh, yeah.
But what they did initially is they, as they do in all cases, they went ahead and they, I mean, you almost, if you're talking about the flag issue today, we could just focus on that. But if you look at the whole perspective, and I mean, there's quite a bit of time we've got here, so maybe we could look at the dynamics from the day one almost. The first thing that they did was they set up this community of Wyndham and set up a homeowners association and filed with Henrico County that it would be based on 3,500 homes. And then the total plan for the whole community never exceeded 1,600 homes. And that didn't make any sense, but when you look at it, it does. It was so that they would never reach the threshold where they had to turn control over to the homeowners, because they'd be mandated to turn control over once they got to a certain percentage being sold.
Mm-hmm.
So they did that, and when they reached the point where they were dealing with the issue of the flag, the board was 100% controlled by the developer, because it was 3 developer employees and 2 hand-picked homeowners, but they were homeowners that have been picked by the board to serve on it. So they were people that they knew would basically take the same position.
Puppets.
So what they did is they went ahead and they set up a fraudulent homeowners association, because they set it up for 3,500 homes when they only had 1,600, knowing they would never have to turn control over. But then they turned around and sued us in the name of the homeowners association and used all the homeowners association dues to sue us. So that basically they controlled the whole process, and then they turned around and got to give the bill back to the homeowners.
And what about the homeowners? Are they going to have to come up with a special assessment to cover these
costs?
Well,
I don't think they believe it now, but I would tell them that they do. And the last time that the developer told them that it was only going to be a few $1,000, I was right and they were wrong. So I think there's going to be a special assessment. It could go up to several hundred dollars per house, easy.
Well, we've heard of special assessments.
Even $800 or $900, perhaps, if it, you look at the total cost of the whole thing.
Yeah, I mean, if you are right about the $1 million, and that's what, just on the homeowners association's fees, or is this $1 million total?
Yeah, that would be paid totally by the homeowners. And the thing is, though, that we're struggling now with issues of street lights. We'd like to have a little bit better lighting for the safety of the kids, more sidewalks. And the answer is the association can't afford it, but yet the money that's going to go for this. The other thing, the listeners really need to understand is that the homeowners themselves basically are not opposed to this. Most of them don't even know that it's happening, because we're a transient community. People are out trying to make a living, and they're not paying a lot of attention to what's going on with the few people that do control the Homeowners Association. But all of our neighbors in our little community, which is about 16 homes, they all sign individual letters. And one of them actually wrote his own letter. He's a lawyer to the judge and all, my next-door neighbor,
mm-hmm.
saying that they thought the flagpole was very attractive and added to the neighborhood, and they did not want the developer to speak for them. They thought the suit should be dismissed. So those are all the immediate neighbors, but yet the suit goes on. So
What did the judge say? Did he do anything? Obviously, the judge sided with the association, because I read here on your website you've started a new, you started 2 organizations, right?
Well, we've got a website, AmericanFlagTrial.com, which is getting about 500 hits a day from all over the country. It's up,
okay.
It's been up a short time. It's got over 7,500 or in that area hits now, I guess, 7,200, something like that.
Okay, let's...
And then the other is AmericanFlagAlliance.com. That's the advocacy site.
Okay, why don't we make sure we repeat that address for our listeners a couple of times during
the first one. The first one, which is basically the update on the case and background on it and all that, is AmericanFlagTrial.com. And the other one, which is the legislative advocacy, is the AmericanFlagAlliance.com. AmericanFlagAlliance.com, and we incorporated the American Flag Alliance with the intent of opposing homeowner associations on this flag issue all across the country. There's legislation now in Florida, I think Arizona and Virginia, that be pending in the next next sessions of their local legislatures, and we're trying to work with the other states as well to get bills in all the states to basically take away the right of the homeowners association to control this. You know, your local government wouldn't be able to do what the homeowners association, which is interesting. They act like a fourth level of government, but yet they don't have any of the accountability
right.
that a true government has.
Right. Well, Virginia, I mean, because of you, Richard, because of your flag issue, 2 years ago, one of our Virginia legislators, Bill Bowling,
sure.
Bill Bowling, introduced legislation saying that basically associations cannot regulate flying flags. That was watered down considerably by the Community Associations Institute lobbying arm, who decided that, you know, you just absolutely cannot micromanage associations, and this is what the homeowners want. They don't want flags. Yet there's nothing in your governing documents, from what I've read, that specifically bans a flagpole. They're relying on the catch-all phrase, no structure shall be placed, erected, or installed unless you get permission and go to...
Well, I mean, in fairness to my neighbors, it's really the developer that's done this, and then they've sort of re-indoctrinated a few homeowners and put them in a position so
right.
that they go along with all this and told them why this is right, and every time they say anything or sit down at any meeting, they've got all the homeowner developer advisors sitting right on each side of them whispering in their ear what to say next. But the homeowners really have never really had a problem with this. They're just taking the heat for it and paying the price for it. It's been the H.H. Hunt Corporation out of Blacksburg, Virginia, which is a major developer with about over 1,000 full-time employees, that's the organization that's done this, not the homeowners. The developer has really been the sole force behind it all. But they're so slick about it. I mean, the way they organize everything. For example, in the bylaws and restrictive covenants and guidelines and all that, I've lived in planned communities before, and I lived in planned communities that I thought pretty much meant the intent or what Property Owner Association Act was supposed to address, which was some relatively clear architectural controls that would be understood easily by people that would be purchasing the property. And in those three communities, I had four or five or six pages of restrictions, and I knew what they were, and I abided by them, and I had never had any trouble.
How many pages do you have now?
Well, now I've got probably about 200 or so pages.
Yep.
And a lot of it is amendments, and you've got to go to the courthouse and search the records to find all these recorded amendments and all that, which is probably about a day and a half job for a title searcher, an experienced title searcher. It's just so convoluted and obscure, but yet the court says, well, you have knowledge of it because it's recorded in the courthouse. But what I was going to say is on the issue of flagpoles, there's at least 30 yard items that are listed as either prohibited or allowed or whatever specifically in all these guidelines, and they even get into the architectural design requirements and square footage floor requirements for doghouses. They've got requirements for compost piles. They've got requirements for bird baths, but they never mention flag or flagpole. And it might seem strange, but if you think about it, it really isn't. What they did is they realized that there'd be some people that would not appreciate not being able to have their American flag, or have a rule that said you can't have an American flag, so they purposely left it out. Well, I naively looked at it all and read it and said, gee, there's 30 things in here. I guess if they're covering compost piles, there's no problem with a flag or a flagpole. And then I went ahead and acted on what I thought was their good faith document. Now I realize the whole thing was just a marketing ploy to put all this stuff in there. And incidentally, compost piles are perfectly okay.
It's just flagpoles.
Your compost pile, even if it's filled with yard waste from your neighborhood dog, I guess, and rotting leaves, I don't think a compost pile can smell very good in the summer, but compost piles are okay, but American flags on top of a $2,000 dark bronze flagpole that you don't even see, it blends with the trees, is visually offensive.
Let me ask you something. I'm not an attorney, but you say there's about 30 things that are listed that specifically are banned or regulated by
yard items, right?
By the association, right, the yard items. Now, the fact that flagpoles were not included, wouldn't they automatically be excluded? I mean, since they went to all the trouble of listing.
Well, that's a good argument. The only thing is that I had a little bit of a naive belief in the legal system, because I went into court, and as this case developed in the beginning, the judge, the first thing the judge said was that there's so many fact issues in this case, so who said what issues and those kinds of things, that we're definitely going to have a jury to decide the fact issues. And then as the case kept getting further and further along, it got to be that all my defenses, like the things that we're talking about right now, those became ruled by the judge to be not relevant to the case. And we've got to narrow the issues, otherwise this could be a two-week trial. So basically the judge ruled that I would not be allowed to introduce all of my key defenses.
Is that legal?
Well, that's why we're appealing the Virginia Supreme Court, and that's why the Homeowners Association will probably be waiting another year and a half or 2 years to get a ruling from them, and be spending another $200,000. And if they go along with the developer on this thing, then it's going to go on to the federal level. But I don't think it's legal, no. But the best thing I think that people can really relate to is that after the judge said that we have to have a jury trial, all of a sudden some force must have influenced him on this, and I'll just let people make their own decisions on that one. But as we got within a couple weeks of the trial, he announces that, well, you know, I've been thinking about the issue of the jury, and I don't really think we need a jury because, you know, as the judge, I have to listen to the jury, but I can overrule the jury. So why do we really need a jury if I have the authority to overrule the jury? Well, it sounded to me like you're saying, why do we need a jury that might embarrass me by ruling against me when I've already made my mind up and I know what I'm going to decide? So you took my jury away from me.
I thought that was up to you. I thought it was your decision as to whether you had a jury trial or let the judge.
I think the General Assembly, when they wrote the law saying that there would be juries, but then they put in there that the judge had a right to overrule a jury if he thought
right.
The jury had ruled incorrectly.
But
so
you have to have a
judge to say that they could do it without a jury.
But the jury has to be there for the judge to overrule the jury. I mean, the judge can't arbitrarily, unilaterally decide, hey, we don't even need to
actually,
go.
The way it's worded is a little different. It says that the jury's decision to the judge is advisory, and the judge shall take the jury's decision into consideration on fact-finding matters, like whether that was reasonable that was left out, whether I reasonably relied on the 150 or 180 pages and the 30 other items. Actually, I have a letter which was written to the developer prior to our purchasing saying that we're probably going to put a barbecue pit and a flagpole in that area. But it then goes on and says, but you've told me that that's not a problem, so I didn't put that in my lot design plan. But the judge ruled that that was not credible and irrelevant, and, you know, it just went on and on like that.
I mean, that happens. What you're saying is not unique, and you're not the only one that's had to deal with that. We hear the same things over and over and over again from the entire country, you know, where developers and board members go ahead and give their okays. They say, yeah, it's okay. That's not going to be a problem. Don't worry about it. And so along comes the consumer, buys the house, deciding, you know, these people ought to know. I mean, these are reliable people.
Well, interestingly, I started reading back through the trial transcript the other day, and my wife probably doesn't even know this, but Dan Schmidt, who's the vice president for this region of the H.H. Hunt Corporation, the developer, his testimony in his deposition was that even if he had put in writing that it was okay for us to have a flagpole, that they could have overruled that at any time. And that's what happened in Arizona, and that's what happened in Florida. In Arizona, the gentleman out there who is a veteran that would fly on the date that his brother had been killed in the Air War over Germany, he would fly the flag that had been on his brother's coffin.
Duck Wasso, right.
And that flag was said to flap and make too much noise.
Mm-hmm.
he had it in writing that he could have that flag when he bought the lot, but then they said, well, that's fine, but we can't speak for the homeowners association. We're only the developers. So they rescinded it.
Yeah, I mean, we hear these stories over and over again. I mean, since September 11th, the number of flag stories that have come out is incredible. And what's fascinating is that so many people are being fined by their associations for having the temerity to fly the flag. Are you being fined?
No, I'm not. They never went that route. I guess they went straight to the threat of a lawsuit with me, which I don't know why they didn't go the other way, except maybe at that point they didn't have any real restriction in the covenants, and maybe they felt that they would be stretching it to fine me the little, $10 a day fine, I guess, given that there was nothing in the covenants about it. But let me go back to the General Assembly. That's interesting, because you had said before about the bill that Senator Bowling took into the General Assembly.
Right.
That went in, was coined the Wyndham Flag Bill.
Right.
It passed the General Assembly 140-0.
Yeah.
And the thing was, that was so interesting, was that when it came to the time for public comment, there's a gentleman in Richmond, Senator Benjamin Lambert, Benny Lambert, who's a black gentleman. He's a physician. He's in the Virginia Senate.
Mm-hmm.
He made the comment. He said, you know, these homeowner associations have just gone way, way too far.
Mm-hmm.
He said, I'll tell you a story, and he told it to the other members of the General Laws Committee. He said, my developer put a covenant in my homeowner's association, or I guess at that time it was a Subdivided Land Act, that says that I can't live in this community. And everybody kind of looked like, what is he talking about? He said, it says that only Caucasians can live in this community.
Mm-hmm.
And that was put there by the developer.
Mm-hmm.
And he said, you know, we got rid of that crap in 1973,
mm-hmm.
which I think wasn't, I was surprised it didn't happen earlier, when we ruled that it was a violation of public policy for any of these homeowner associations to have any covenants that restricted who could live in a community because of their race. He said, we voided that, and he said, that's what we should do with this. We should just simply void all these homeowner associations' restrictions that impede the basic right of free speech, free expression of your patriotism, and the basic right of property ownership, the private property, of being able to put a flagpole on your own property. These are basic rights that are being infringed on by these homeowner associations, just like they infringed on rights in the past when they said, you can only live here if you're a Caucasian. He said, we need to do this. And at that point, everybody got very nervous that was in this little caucus with the Homeowners Association. And then they suddenly decided, they came over and made a deal with me that if we didn't push that legislation, that they would speak in favor of passing the bill that Senator Bowling had and would abide by it.
Oh, really?
So then they stood, when they were allowed the time for public comment, they said, anyone that wants to speak in favor of the bill, please step forward. And the Homeowners Association group came forward and said, we think this bill as it's presently written is fine, and we will abide by the clear message we're getting from the General Assembly. However, we don't want the bill to be toughened and tightened up, and they've implied, as Senator Lambert would like. And if you don't tighten the bill up, we will abide by, and we hear loud and clear, the message of the Virginia General Assembly. The bill passed 140-0. The General Assembly went home in March. The governor signed it in April. And then, this is what, it just shows where they're coming from. About 4 weeks later, they decided that, well, now we're going to go ahead and we're going to decide that that bill doesn't apply to the Wyndham Foundation because it doesn't say that it's retroactive, even though they had testified that they would abide by it and all that. And that's the position they took, which then resulted in the in them saying that the bill wasn't retroactive, and the judge went along with them on that. So basically, I think this year's General Assembly is going to be interesting because most of these folks that are in the General Assembly are going to be either recall or definitely be clearly reminded of what was said. And when that happens, they're going to be in a position, I think, where they're going to realize that that they were tricked. They were tricked into passing a watered-down bill because they were promised in open hearings that the Homeowners Association would honor the bill and abide by it. And they turned around and said, after it was all over, it's like they said, nah, it doesn't apply to us.
Now, wait a minute.
We tricked you.
Let me ask you, I'm a little confused here. When you said the homeowners, when it was opened up for public comment, you said the homeowners came by and said...
And the community, is that what's called, community association lady?
And so, oh, okay.
She was there, and then Wyndham people were there, and yeah.
Okay, now I thought the original bill basically said, hands off, you cannot prohibit people from flying the flag. But what actually was signed into law was you cannot regulate flag flying unless you give people advance notice in the disclosure package.
That's how it was passed, right.
And that's how it was passed. So basically, anybody can come up and say, oh, we're going to regulate you to death on your flag flying issue, and it's in the package, and off we go. Nothing about whether it's in the governing documents or any of that.
That's how they tricked Bowling, and they tricked the other people in the General Assembly, because what they basically said was that, all right, if anybody's going to put a flag restriction, then they're going to have to be upfront and honest and bold enough to put it in the restrictive covenant in the beginning, in the disclosure pack. And if they're honest enough to do that and they feel that that's necessary and someone gets to read that and still wants to buy the property, then that's going to be okay. That was the bill that they basically compromised with the trade association,
right,
and passed. But the trade association, what they did was they agreed to that, but then they turned around and said, well, you might have thought that it said, unless it was in the disclosure documents, that would have meant at the time the person bought the property, and that would be the common sense interpretation of that. But from a legalistic interpretation, we're looking at it and saying that only applies to purchases from this day forward. So it doesn't apply to Olton's case.
That's right.
And that's kind of how they got around that. And they were very afraid that initially the sentiment was to pass a bill that was more along the lines of what Benjamin Lambert wanted, which was an absolute prohibition on any restrictions on the flag by homeowner association. And then the trade association went in and lobbied for a more watered down bill, and that's when they decided that they were going to go ahead and abide by the intent of the General Assembly as long as they passed the watered down bill. But then, of course, when the General Assembly adjourns and goes home, then there's nothing that the General Assembly can do about it when they break the promise.
And then, yeah, and then back it goes.
Yeah.
And then you're in court and trying to sort through that mess. It's now I think is the time to do anything, because you've got this incredible patriotism that's all over the country. And in the court of public opinion, there's no way that these people are going to win.
If there's anyone, you know, that's listening that really feels strongly in favor of homeowner association, I think that what they need to do is they need to look at this and realize what it is that is the evil that's out there that they need to attack. Maybe it's the guy that paints the house in pink and orange stripes. You know, if they go after that person, then that is probably somebody that they're clearly going to succeed with in court. But when they decide to go after the American flag, as they've done all over the country, all it's going to do is erode public opinion as it relates to these homeowner associations and planned communities, and it's the wrong target to pick. If they want to pick on somebody that has a clear visual nuisance, the guy that fertilizes his front lawn with fresh cow manure and odorizes the whole neighborhood. That's the guy to go after, not the guy that puts an American flag up on Memorial Day. That's the mistake that the Homeowners Association and developers have made. There's some things that are not going to, in the long run, they're just not going to win on. The cow manure guy in the front lawn, the guy that's painting his house in stripes, those are cases that they're going to win in their covenants, but they're not going to win when they attack things that are so sacred and so much of a basic right as free speech and the free expression of patriotism. That's what they're doing wrong. They think they've got so much power that they can go after those things. Personally, I would be in their favor if my neighbor put fresh cow manure all over his front lawn as a fertilizing agent. I would be in favor of trying to stop that as well. But I'm not really going to be in favor of taking away the rights that they've tried to take away.
We're going to take a break, and we'll be right back. Back by popular demand, and every week we'll be playing this song. Richard, this song was written for us by a guy by the name of Harry Flagel, who's a professional writer, and it's for homeowners associations, and it's called One Way Ticket to Hell, and we'll be right back.
Well, I finally bought my dream home to enjoy retirement life. I've made new friends and buddies, lots of parties for my wife. It seemed that life was perfect, all my neighbors felt the same. Then along came death by CCRs, life's over, I'm fair game. Those petty rules and regulations, it's enough to make you cry. They're full of woes, no pink flamingos, someone tell us why. Slick managers and lawyers slither close, but they won't tell why our dream home should remind us we bought a one-way ticket to hell.
WEBR, Fairfax Radio, you're on the Commons. I'm Sue Bartholomew. On the Commons with me today is Richard Alton, and Eva's back there too, his wife. We're going to be talking to Richard again in just a minute, but first I wanted to catch you up on some news. Many of you regular listeners know that we've been tracking Winona Blevins. Winona is the 82-year-old Texas widow whose house was sold on the courthouse steps back last April. And she's been homeless ever since. And I talked to her this morning. She's hanging in there. They're going to court right now on, I think it's January 2nd, but she's an amazing lady. She's still clinging to the hope that there will be a resolution before then. Let's keep her in our thoughts as we do that. Here in Virginia, right in my own backyard, the board hereby notifies you that it has declared you to be undesirable as a member of the Hillwood Ownership Contract, reads a September 26 letter that was sent to Eugenia Sullivan of Falls Church. Eugenia is also 82 years old. She has lived in her townhouse for 50 years. And she was sick. She's been sick lately, and she's been living with a couple of her kids while she recuperates. And by doing that, she's in violation of one of the laws that says, one of their bylaws that says, you cannot leave your unit vacant for more than 6 months. And she's been out of her unit for more than 6 months. So they want her out. She's now been declared an undesirable member of the association. How's that? How'd you like that, boy? Richard and Eva, we've got, I only have one phone line, unfortunately, so we can't take calls. But I know that the entire country is with you. What I do is I put out a weekly promo about the show and who my guests are going to be. And if I can't take calls, they send me questions by email or comments, and we've got a few for you. First, I'd like to do some of the comments so that you don't have to answer them, but this is from Rich, and he says, I applaud Richard Alton for his resolve. We are behind him all the way. Fight the good fight and realize there's a light at the end of the tunnel. We have from the Reverend Clark, HOAs would have a real fight on their hands if they ordered me to remove my flag. This is my flag, my country by birth, won by my family's blood, tears, and sweat. What I am saying to all homeowners associations is don't attempt to trample on my flag or my country. If you don't like what goes on in my country, then leave it. For the homeowners' fight to be won, it has to start somewhere, in their town, maybe even in their state. It has started with the Altons. Good luck to them. Hi, Shu. Well, guess what? Almost every condo here in my complex is flying Old Glory now, and most of them are still up, the last I saw. I haven't put mine up yet, but that's not to say that some patriotic that the same patriotic spirit is not in me. Sometimes out of some horrible disaster, something good comes out of it. Some wrongs are rectified, not only with the flag, but other things in the nation as well. We just have to push on with our agenda until victory prevails, as we don't want evil to prevail at home or abroad with the terrorists. We just have to hang in there. Let's see. Hello, Shu. I just wanted to know, especially from your guest and his wife, why it takes so long and it is so financially draining to fight for the simple things in life. We're all supposed to be unit owners. We're all supposed to pay taxes and maintenance fees for services. Why aren't the judges, lawyers, and management companies more responsive to the people? That's from Diane, who says she's a big fan of On the Commons, which is nice. Why aren't the judges paying attention to what the people want?
Well, I think...
That's a tough one, I'm sorry.
Are you asking me, or are you ready to go to more to read?
No, I'm asking you. I didn't say
Richard, so I didn't know if you were going to read something else.
I'm sorry,
as a lawyer, and I'm not a litigator, because people are surprised when I say this, I'm a Purple Heart vet from the Marines in Vietnam, but I basically don't really like conflict very much. I try to avoid it, and I try to make peace and work things out with people, and I feel that's much more rewarding. But I am a lawyer, and I've been a lawyer for 30-some years, and I've never tried a case in my life, but I do have enough familiarity to say that I'm very disappointed to have to say this, but after observing what I've observed in this case, I think that there's a lot more at the local level that is decided behind a closed door, that isn't decided in the light of day. Things are decided that are not following the process of law, and whether it's approvals by the county supervisors or whether it's decisions of local judges or whatever, there's just an awful lot more that goes on that you're not aware of. And I think when you look at the process of litigation itself, I believe that the lawyers use litigation costs as a tool in order to intimidate homeowners, thinking that the homeowners will not be willing to or able to spend the amount of money that's necessary to pursue their cause. And in our case, I just give you an example. I was a enlisted man in the Marines, and I come from a family where my dad went to the 8th grade, worked 48 years in the same factory. So we're not, and my wife is an immigrant from China. We're not sort of what you could call a silver spoon living off the trust funds from the inheritance. But we think some things are more valuable than money and more important than money. And in their case, they thought that the litigation costs would deter us from doing what we're doing. And again, if there's anyone listening out there that wants to know what our resolve is on this thing, our resolve is the $1 million expense the next 7 years if it takes that. And we'll spend it one way or another, even if we wind up living in a little trailer in a rented trailer lot. We'll do it. And I give you a proof of that by the fact that on my 17th birthday, as the youngest kid in my high school class, I went down and joined the service. When the other kids were going off to Boy Scout camp, I was off to the service. I went on my active duty when I had only 90 days left on my enlistment, and I knew I wasn't going to get to go to Vietnam with the Marines. I negotiated a deal, which was a 13-month extension to go to Vietnam, conditional on being with the Marines in an infantry combat unit. And then when I got there, after about 3 months of heavy combat, they decided that I had done enough, and they were going to send me to a rear unit. And at that point, I requested captain's mast and insisted on going back to the front line. When that was denied, I then wrote to my senator and to the commandant of the Marine Corps and told them both how many Marines were dying in the field for lack of good corpsmen, and that I didn't think my job meant anything, and I needed to be back in the field, and if the Commandant of the Marine Corps didn't respond to it, he would have the blood of some of these guys on his hands that were going to die because they didn't have enough corpsmen. Well, I got my wish. I got back to the line. But my point is, if I had that fortitude and tenacity then, why would the Wyndham Foundation think that we're going to back off on this now? No way.
I was going to say, don't mess with Richard, huh?
I'm not a tough guy. Trust me, I'm not. But
no,
my
but
point
you're
is, determined. That, is that values matter to me. Values matter to me more than money. Money is just, if it's there, it's fine. But if it isn't, my wife and I and our kids, we have our health and together, we'll be happy. I'm 57 years old with a one-year-old and a six-year-old at home.
Oh, my God.
They're orphans in China. We adopted them. These are our kids, and they're going to grow up with the right kind of values, and money is not going to be the dominant force.
And, I applaud you. Good for you. Good for you. So many people are, you know, too willing to roll over, but...
But my point isn't to pat myself on the back. It's if there's anyone from the community association, which I'm sure there are, listening, they need to let Wyndham know that there is no way we're going to back off on this. No way.
What can we do? Oh, I mean, would sending emails and letters help?
Well, we've got the website, AmericanFlagTrial.com. We'd like to see a lot of bulletin board postings on there. But we're doing a lot that is just about at the point of being announced. I just did three press releases at a very local level yesterday because I have a delegate that's in the General Assembly that's taking in a bill for this year's General Assembly that is exactly the language of Senator Lambert's race covenants bill that says that it's a violation of the public policy of Virginia for any town, city, county, private contract, homeowners association, judge's decision, or any other thing that's enforceable by Virginia and in any way impedes the flying of the American flag on land that you own, provided the display is in compliance with the U.S. flag code. And that's going to, I couldn't have a bill any stronger than that. And that's the bill that's going into the General Assembly.
Now, let's hope it doesn't get watered down. So
it won't get watered down by this gentleman. And it's going in. It's going in from one of the most senior people in the General Assembly.
Yeah, but you know, we know how these things work, Richard.
No, he's adamant. He's not watering it down.
He's adamant, but before it gets signed by the, before it gets signed and enacted into law, it probably will be. I hope not, but I'd really like to see.
We've got a goal. My wife and I have a goal, and you can probably get a feel already that we're very hardworking people, and we really are goal oriented. We've got a goal of 100,000 signatures addressed to the General Assembly on this issue.
I'll sign it.
My wife has already got well over 1,000, and we just started about a week ago.
I'll sign it.
1,000. These are not signatures. These are letters, individual letters.
I'll sign.
And she's got way over 1,000 already.
Okay, anybody who wants to join in, you know, if you can't get Richard's website, you can always email me at onthecommons@talks.rr.com, and I'll make sure that you're in touch with him.
Let me give him the website again. It's AmericanFlagTrial.com. That's the one on the update on the old issue in Virginia, mainly. The other one, which is the national level, is AmericanFlagAlliance.com, and that's the incorporation, which, again, the detractors are going to say we did all this in reaction to September 11th. The fact is that that was incorporated on August 8th or 9th, I believe. So we incorporated that with the intent to advocate nationally against homeowners associations, mainly on the issue of the American flag. And if it may have a life of itself after that if there's a need. But our issue right now is we think the homeowners associations picked the wrong target when they picked the American flag.
If they had
any sense that they can go back to the guy with the striped house if they want to, but leave the American flag alone.
Okay. I was going to ask you, once you get the American flag issue settled, do you think you're going to stay active in the homeowner association issue to prevent? Because, I mean, there are other concerns as well. One of them is people are being fined and foreclosed on by their association.
I agree with you on that. I would like to look at issues that go beyond that in the General Assembly. And I know this is not really what we were planning to talk about today, but I think, again, it's probably not much of a problem to let to pull the drape off the statute and let you see what it really looks like. My wife and I have made a decision about a year ago to fund a grant to the to one of a Virginia law school to fund a project, an advocacy project, which would have at least 5 and maybe 10 law students each year getting grants from us, educational grants. And what they would do is they would learn about the General Assembly and the federal legislative process by getting a bill into the General Assembly or into the federal level that deals with property rights vis-a-vis homeowner associations.
All right.
And we would probably have 5 or 6 bills every year introduced in the General Assembly, because I'll tell you the way it works. The General Assembly is on such a rush program that what they have to do is they have to deal with these little, I call them sneaklet, little tiny bills that only have a few sentences in them. And if it's a comprehensive bill, it goes off to some big committee and gets studied forever.
Right.
But if it's a little bill that just says you can't fine people $10 a day or something like that, then that kind of bill can get through and get passed. Example of Senator Mims. I was really surprised to see his position on these issues, because a lot of people in the General Assembly assume that Senator Mims is going to take the position in favor of the Homeowners Association.
No.
And he said at the General Assembly when I was there, my bill was being considered, he said, I represent Reston, the largest, I guess, in the state. He said, the people are just plain fed up.
Yeah.
There's a few power-hungry people that are on these boards that think that they're some kind of El Presidente.
Mm-hmm.
And that they have this authority and power over their neighbors, and they're just going nuts with it. And the people are fed up. And he was down there eroding away the same kind of thing at the 10-day fine, and that particular time he got it cut back from 365 days at $10 a day to 90 days.
Yep.
And this is his district.
Well, I've talked to Bill Mims, and I was at a meeting, a workshop with him of the Virginia Housing Commission one day, and you had all of the industry attorneys sitting there going, oh, you don't have to worry about that, you know, it's just a handful of malcontents. And he looked at them and he said, no, don't even try that. He said, we hear from these people. He says, it's not a handful of malcontents. There are some serious problems out there. A couple of years ago, he came out with an absolutely excellent bill that would have provided for some, you know, adult supervision from the state on homeowners associations, and that was watered down, and we now have, I think we have, an ombudsman, you know, for associations that's being funded through the Management Information Fund. Now, that's, talk about a disaster. That's where they're taking money from you and me without you and me knowing about it. Passing it through the Virginia Real Estate Board, which is then being administered by the Community Associations Institute. I mean, the advisory commission there is made up of who's who and, you know, reads like who's who in CAI. And they're the ones who decide where that money's going to go and how that money's going to be used. And they're the ones who promote it and went after, you know, an ombudsman, just so that we would all back down. They'd say, Jay, we've got an ombudsman. The ombudsman, I testified against the ombudsman, by the way, and was followed by CAI saying, oh, CAI supports the ombudsman's position. Yeah. We got a couple more emails. Can we get to those really quickly? Richard?
Sure.
Okay. Hello, Richard. Should we consider the homeowner associations that block display of the American flag to be unpatriotic? Indeed, can they be described as anti-American? And that's from Nicholas.
I don't think that's the issue, to be honest with you. I think that what the issue is, and I hate to say it this way, but I mean, it'd be easy enough for me to sit here and say what I think people might want me to say, which is that, yeah, these guys are anti-American. I don't think it's that. I just think it's just pure developer greed. They're so afraid that if you put a pickup truck in the driveway and an American flag in the yard, that you're going to get a bunch of redneck hillbillies that want to move in there, and that's going to take down the image of their community.
Okay.
And I hate to say it, but I think that's it. I don't think it's Americanism. I think it's the image that they want. The same as the old covenants that said, you can only live here if you're white.
Okay. Now, that may be true with you. However, we've got the issue, you know, the builders have been gone for 30 years, and you've got the board members who are doing this. And
well, I think the association, the board members are just carrying on that same mentality.
And well, you know, the 30 years later, you know, it's happening, and this is something that CAI has always pushed, by the way, and now they're backing down, and they're saying, oh, wait a minute, you know, maybe we ought to back off on this. I'll tell you, there was a post on the CAI's message board some time ago by a member of the industry, one of their managers, and, you know, he's been president of his condo for 12 years or something ridiculous like that. And his comment was that people who hang American flags are as disrespectful of their neighbors as people who hang sheets up in their windows instead of curtains. That's the attitude. Now, this guy has nothing to do with the builder, and he's never been involved with the builder.
Well, they said it created a visual nuisance that could lower property values. I mean, I, as I said before, I'm not a confrontational purpose. I try to give people the benefit of the doubt, and I like to think that maybe it isn't really that they think that the American flag looks that awful. It's that the kind of people that fly the American flag are the kind of people that they don't want in the neighborhood.
That, I never thought of it put quite that way. But
it's a pickup truck and the American flag and, you know.
The gun-toting guys out there, right?
Just the regular old folks, yeah. They're not quite fitting in. The question of, you know, what school you went to and all that. I've got an associate's, a bachelor's, a master's, and a doctorate, but I'm still just I'm just a basic kind of guy.
And you've got a flagpole to prove it. We've got one more email here. It's hard to understand why there's such an offense in allowing homeowners to fly the American flag. I would like to know if Mr. Olton feels that board members subconsciously realize that HOAs are un-American in so much as HOAs squash an individual's right to free expression. And that goes back to the truck and the flag. Is it possible that the act of flying the American flag reminds HOA board members of their hypocrisy and that this represents the underlying problem with homeowners displaying our honored flag? And that's from Rick.
There's a strong message from Rick there, I think. And I think I agree to a certain extent. But I think the un-Americanism, I guess maybe my philosophy minor is coming out a little bit here. I look at it more, the un-Americanism is the fact that there's certain basic concepts and rights in our society that are totally protected when it comes to the federal government, the state government, and the local government. And what we've allowed to have happen is we've allowed this de facto fourth level of government, but it has none of the accountability. The Homeowners Association has more right to take away from people and infringe on people's rights than the federal government, the state government, and the local government all put together.
And it's all by
no accountability, yet it acts like a government.
Mm-hmm. And it's doing that, you know, by statute.
And that's the reason why my wife and I have decided to spend our money to fund this public interest project, I guess I could call it. It doesn't really have a name, of advocacy through helping law students to better understand the legislative process and the political process by working every year in the Virginia General Assembly. We've made a 5-year grant for the next 5 years, at least 5 bills every year for 5 years. That'll be 25 headaches for this trade association, which I don't even know the name of it. But basically, they're going to be very busy opposing my law students that are going to be working with a lot of zeal, a lot of enthusiasm to protect people's rights, at least in the Virginia General Assembly, for the next 5 years at least.
I think that's fabulous. I think that's absolutely great.
And I've been there 3 years in a row myself, so I guess I'll probably be down there on POA-oriented bills or HOA-oriented bills for the next 10 years myself.
Well, maybe I'll join you down there, Richard. I think
it's not much of a drive.
No, I know. Oh, no, I was down there.
I mean, from where I am, it's very easy to get there.
Yeah.
And, you know, we've got Eric Cantor in my neighborhood. It's interesting. People might realize he lives in Windham. He was a House of Delegate member. He was a patron of the flag bill, and he's not allowed as a U.S. congressman now. He cannot fly a flag in his front yard as a U.S. congressman because he lives in Windham.
You know, some of these laws get enacted because some of the legislators are also affected. I remember Terry, and I can't remember her name. She's a Virginia delegate who was saying, gee, I sold my townhouse and I went to my association and asked for the package. And I asked for just the financial information because I had everything else I needed for the disclosure package. And they wanted to charge me $100. She says, that's ridiculous. $100 is for the entire package. And so she says, we need to make sure that they follow the rules. And, you know, again, until they get bitten, until one of them gets bitten, you know, gets caught up in this mess, nothing seems to happen. But I'm delighted. I have one, you know, we're running out of time here, and we could probably go on for a lot longer. You're being charged $95,000.
$95,000 was the appeal bond, and again, I think the judge did that to intimidate us from asserting our right of appeal.
Is that done? Is that routine? Is that normal?
No, that's part of our appeal. Again, it's going to be, that's why the total bill is going to wind up being $1 million. I'm convinced of it. The whole idea is an appeal bond is supposed to not be, in a sense, not supposed to confiscate or penalize. And putting up a $95,000 appeal bond to take a case of whether you can or can't fly a flag to the next level in the Virginia court system is punitive. And that's my position. And on top of that, they awarded us $87,858.58 of, quote, damages that we've caused the Homeowners Association by having our flag.
They just get more and more
ridiculous.
They also
budgeted for reimbursement of police services for the forced removal of the flag, which is going to be another fiasco, because I'm getting emails every day of these people, how do I sign up? I'm ready to come to Richmond and defend the flag. I mean, I've got hundreds of ex-servicemen, and I'm not advocating. I've not even said this on my website. Anyone can look. But they're pushing me to know if this is going to come, and they want to come and camp out and put tents up and defend the flag. And I hope it never comes to that. But if it does, there's going to be a great show on the CBS Evening News. It's a shame to see that in America. But trust me, there's a lot of folks out there that will tell me to stay in the house, and they're going to take care of it.
There you go. I think that's great.
And it's a shame. But that's, and if the Homeowners Association think that they're ultimately going to benefit from this press and these positions, they're so sadly mistaken.
Well, they're backing down. They're backing down. That, you know, they're now saying, hey, wait a minute. You know, maybe we ought to give you 180 days where you can fly the flag just so that we get over this hump. Don't buy into that. You know, you should never have to get permission from someone to fly your flag. That's my last word on that. We're out of time. Thank you so much for joining us today, Richard.
It's been my pleasure.
Good luck, and I intend to keep in touch with you.
Okay.
And anybody who did not get those,
then put a posting on the website about your show. People can listen.
Great. That's great. Thank you. I would love to do that. And anyway. Be sure, everybody, to tune in every Saturday from 2 to 3 right here at WEBR. We'll be here, and stay tuned, because...